ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
An Illinois man with a concealed carry permit used his AR-15 to stop a bloody stabbing attack in his neighborhood on Monday, the 26th of February. The stabbing happened on Monday in Thomas's apartment complex in the Oswego Township, Illinois. Thomas said after he witnessed the confrontation, he stepped back into his apartment and grabbed his AR-15. Thomas said his AR-15 is the weapon of choice for home protection. Once confronted by Thomas and his AR, the attacker ran off. The suspect was found shortly afterwards, according to the Chicago Tribune. The stabbing victim was taken to Rush Copley Medical Center in Aurora, Illinois, and is in serious condition. Thomas has a concealed weapons permit, so will face no charges. This has been the DGU Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America, firm and free.
That's what a ship is, you know. It's not just a keel and a hull and a deck and sails that a ship needs, but what a ship is, really is freedom. Now, bring me that horizon.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free, both in uniform and not, as I have not been, nor has my guest, Sue Colton grew up in Pompano Beach, Florida, where she attended the University of Florida and Florida Atlantic University with a bachelor's degree in education and a master's in early childhood education and administrative supervision. She spent more than 30 years in public education, 22 of those as a principal in an elementary school, and in 2000 was named National Distinguished Principal from Florida and went to D.C. to receive the award on behalf of her students, teachers, and parents in the community. Her school was a feeder to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where the latest massacre took place on Valentine's Day, and one of her previous students was a victim. It is a joy and a pleasure to welcome to the microphones and telephones of America Armed and Free, Ms. Sue Colton. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Charles. It's a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners today.
Good. You have a number of items. You sent me an interesting study put out by the Bloomberg-supported Johns Hopkins Research Hospital. Tell us what your ideas are about helping to prevent this type of violence.
Well, my ideas are to strengthen the background checks of gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my ideas are to protect the children and the schools across our nation, not only in Florida in my area, but certainly across our nation. And I also believe that we should, look into the mental health industry and you know, what's happening to people falling through the cracks in mental health.
Mm. What do you mean protect?
Well, protect, to do everything that we can that is possible, so that our children are safe at school.
You know, I'm a defense instructor, and I understand that defense needs to be in depth. You can't just do one thing and one thing only and say that's defense. And certainly one item of defense has been an item that President Trump has talked about, and, you know, having teachers be, not everybody, not issuing guns. It's not like a militia where you're going to pass out guns from a locker or anything like that, but allowing some teachers to be armed. That's the last defense that there is. But it seems to me that a lot of people on the school side of this are sort of allergic to the idea that well-trained teachers could be armed as a last-ditch effort to save lives. Do you have any reason what you and I discussed Don Hopschung off air, mm-hmm. the principal at Sandy Hook who died 15 mm-hmm. yards from the killer. Why is there such, does there appear to be, and this is not a trap, this is an open question, you can answer it any way you want, why does there appear to be such an allergy to a few teachers who feel they could being armed in that way?
Well, Charles, you know, in talking to teachers and administrators and those who are in education, I think, first of all, that the initial impression that they received from, you know, the suggestion from our president and then also from our legislators, particularly in Florida recently, to arm teachers was to arm every teacher. I mean, that was the initial panic, and I think that's what educators heard when that was stated. So I think the reaction was from what was heard. Now, let me back that up with okay. some information.
Right.
And I know it sounds ridiculous,
right.
but those that are in the classroom and in schools and education have been used to government and politicians passing unfunded mandates
uh-huh.
At the federal and state level, you know, demanding that, you know, that something be done in the schools and passing a law, but then not funding it to back mm-hmm. it up. So, you know, there is even in those who have sensibly taken a deep breath and stepped back and said, okay, I realize that they're not going to ask everybody to have a gun. But, you know, if they do, you know, is this person going to go out and buy their own gun? Where are they going to store it? Are they going to whip it out of their desk drawer? You know, are they going to carry it on their person? What happens if it goes off accidentally in the classroom? You know, what happens if a student is injured by a teacher carrying a gun? You know, what ramifications does that have legally mm-hmm. For a teacher? So I think that because of past patterns, really over the past almost two decades, you know, of public schools being continuously underfunded, it's like, well, you know, what's going to prevent this, you know, being passed as a law and then, you know,
used to form a mandate to force you to do something without funding it. I get that. There are analogies to that. By the way, there's a famous Supreme Court case on it called Prince and Mack v. U.S., and what you're talking about actually is a principle in law called the anti-commandeering principle. And it is now established law in the United States, and it was actually a gun case where the federal government under the Brady Law was trying to force the county sheriff to do a background check, and they was ruled they couldn't do that. They can't commandeer. The federal government cannot legally commandeer the actions of a local district in any way, shape, or form, not without funding it and providing a mechanism to do it. So I get it that is truly sincere. The reason I ask the questions is there seems to be this almost galvanic reaction when, I mean, they're just, once the murderer has gotten to the school with an instrument of murder, there really isn't any other way. I mean, that's the way to stop them. I mean, that's why we have the police. Unfortunately, the police underperform. I'm making a gross understatement when I say the police radically underperformed. The doctrine ever since Columbine has been, you go in. If you're the first and only officer there and there's somebody killing kids, you go in no matter what. And that deputy named Peterson did not do that. And I got to tell you that was a major, major setback to all law enforcement.
Well, I agree with you 100% there. And it's not only that one deputy, Peterson. I think that,
right.
You know, that we'll see that there were additional deputies that also did not go in.
Three others, right. Part of that may have to do, and I don't have full information, so I'm not going to go into detail, but part of it may have to do with the entire idea of the way laws were enforced in order to lessen the amount of conviction of minorities. And there's a lot of controversy that's going to have to be decided. But part of the policy that started changing, I think, 18 or 19 years ago, was they tried to handle incidents, even violent incidents, without calling the police, and to make sure that it didn't rise to the level of calling the police. Do you have any response to that?
Yes. You know, I was a practicing principal when that promise program was put into effect.
Uh-huh.
And yes, it is controversial because on two sides of the, you know, two sides of the issue or the coin, there is the side that says, you know, we're convicting children when they're young, and so they're getting into the system, and it's costing us a lot more money to keep them in the system than it is if we perhaps lessen the consequence for that student or expunged their record or did something by the time that they became an adult. And, of course, the other side was, well, and, you know, some of the other side of that were educators. It's like, well, we know these kids, you know, and we can see, you know, we can feel, we spend time with them. We know that in the future that they could be a potential mass murderer or, you know, in the least, you know, someone who commits criminal acts. And so we think that there needs to be tough reforms and tough penalties for students. So even within the educational community, it was very controversial. But as, you know, as it goes, it was instituted, and, you know, there were lesser students convicted of crimes.
Including this murder.
Yes, exactly. Although we see what the consequence that can be. And, you know, you could say, well, you know, maybe that this person was given 39 chances, you know, which I think is totally off the charts. But I think that, you know, we also need to look at the mental health portion,
right,
too.
And also
the systems that are in place do not speak to each other. They exist in silos.
Right,
we have
do.
Social services. We have law enforcement.
Right.
We have
Sue. We're gonna run out of time.
Right.
We gotta be a little bit more
okay.
concise. But I got a caller that wants to ask you something. Robert, you're live on America Armed and Free with Principal Sue Colton. Now retired Principal Sue Colton. Your comment or question, please.
Yes, Charles. Most of the solutions that have been proposed on the show so far.
Mm-hmm.
There's no money for it.
You don't need a whole lot of money.
In order to solve the ills of the schools, they want more money.
Right.
There is no more money.
Right.
They want mental health. There is no money for mental health. What part of anybody that's willing to pontificate about this stuff has to come up with the funds first, and then they can go jawing about all the investments they want to make second.
Robert, I lovingly disagree with you, and here's why. I don't know that you need any more money. I know that you may need to restructure your priorities so that we do less things that are inconsequential, and we work on things that are more consequential.
That's pontificating right there.
No, it's a real solution, if you listened.
I did listen.
Okay.
There are no resources for this.
Right.
One comment about religion.
Yeah.
Religion is out. It's yesterday's news.
No, it's not.
Nobody 30 years and younger want to go to church. They don't care about your church values.
Right.
And the Catholics want to start teaching math and Latin again. How many 15-year-olds are you going to get to go for that video game?
Well, the whole idea is if you got a 15-year-old, you keep them away from video games, and you use the offices of your family to do that, and you get people to be together as a family, and you use that influence to counteract the video games and to try and move them more into the orbit of the church and of wholesome activities rather than those things that are brought to them by the video games and the video game culture. We're up on our first quarter of the hour break, so we're going to take that now.
Thank you for stressing Article 2, Section 2 of the Arizona Constitution. Political power comes from the people, and government gets its power from the consent of the governed. Purpose is to protect individual rights. Thank you for asking people running for elective office to know what this means.
Liberty Watch, so that government remains servant, not master. Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., right after Swap Shop.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm. Classroom, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Okay, Principal, I know I'm a bad boy, but I had to do that. And then we're talking with Sue Colton, who's a recently retired principal from the same school district, and in fact, at one of the feeder schools to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School and the recent tragedy. And I promised Robert, do you have any websites, anything you want to make sure, real briefly, you want to make sure the audience hears?
Well, yes, Charles. You know, I have a new book that's coming out this month called Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. And my website is www.susanacolton.com.
And is it C-O-L or C-O-U-L?
C-O-L-T-O-N.
All right. I know I shouldn't ask a teacher how to spell something. I should look it up, but I couldn't resist again. I can only stay serious for short periods of time. Robert, I want to address something you said because I think it's important. You're talking about having the funding to do something. What you have to have is the will to do it, and all of life is a decision about where you're going to spend your money. And one of the things that Pima County has is the MIST system, which is Mental Intervention Support Team. And it's sheriff's deputies who go to people who are troubled and who've expressed a desire to do violence, visit with them, evaluate them, and see if they need to go into treatment, which there is money to do, and there's already law to do. But I promised I'd let you follow up, and I want you to stay on after this call because the next caller wants to talk to you. Robert, please go ahead briefly and follow up. I'm sorry, go ahead. Wait a minute. Hold on just a second. Let's do that. Okay, now you go ahead, Robert. Sorry.
This misallocation of money is handled by thieves and frauds. Sue, in your book, being a principal, you know there's no money for school improvements. What other sort of pontifications do you have in your book about money for mental illness that we do not have?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I actually don't have solutions with money tied. I have solutions that don't cost taxpayers any additional money, and that is just for communities to bond together and to decide, you know, what they want their schools and their communities to look like. And I'm talking about local businesses, parents, you know, students who are now at the age of adulthood at 18, school administrators. I know, I've been in public education for over 30 years, that throwing money at public education is not the answer. And I actually agree with you there, because money is not the answer.
Huh. I've got an idea that I've had for a long time, and that's rent the school building to a business. and you can't do this at the grade school level, it'd have to be at high school, rent the whole school building to a business, let the business move in and run the business out of the school and run it as a technology center and as a laboratory where the students get to intern at the business gets the help they need to run it, and the kids learn how to do everything, and then the business pays the electricity bill and the gas bill and such and helps become a partner in the school, and then in return for it, the business doesn't have to pay rent. Well, they pay a lower rent than they might have in a commercial circumstance, but they also assume the expenses of the building.
Well, I think that's a possible idea. I think that's a great idea to put on the table. It's a good way to get businesses involved, as long as those businesses are not making all of the educational decisions.
Not all of them, but they'd certainly be,
need to be made.
But they'd certainly be making curriculum decisions, because clearly they know what they need for people to work in their business much better than any education system would.
And I beg to differ with you there. Right now we have testing companies, we have teacher evaluation companies, we have education has become a big business system,
sure.
And that's one of the things that I talk about in my book, that people are are being affected. Teachers who have the education and the experience in the background in educating students have very little decision-making power anymore.
Right.
And yes, we do want to connect with our businesses because we want our students prepared for the future. But we want to do that in a way of a partnership, not all of a sudden having another business come in and take over our decision.
Heaven forfend.
Such as the NRA.
The NRA is not a business, but anyway, go to, the NRA is a nonprofit. Go to Susan. Susan, you have, you're on the line with Sue Colton. Your comment or question, please.
Yes, Robert wanted a suggestion as to where money could come from on the mental health. What about the fact that, Gabby Giffords and her husband Mark Kelly, if they would have spent all the money that has been spent on getting rid of guns, would have been put forth to help work with mental health problems, it seems to me that would have been a good, I would have chose that line rather than the gun line.
So,
they quickly said, oh no, we need to get rid of guns, but yet they know very well that Jared was mentally ill. Why didn't they go down that road?
Ooh, that's an interesting thought. Take the money you would have used in gun prohibition and put that money into mental health. What do you think of that idea, Sue?
Well, I think that it's another idea that we definitely needs to be discussed, and I'm very hopeful, because I think the conversation is out there in the public now, where we can have this agree to disagree about how we're handling this. I certainly do agree that putting money into mental health is very important, and I think that sometimes that victims of crime, are looking at the easiest way to solve the crime, and that's get rid of the guns.
No, it's not. It's actually
No.
What? You're saying that's their position.
No, I'm saying that may be their position.
Oh, I understand.
As a victim,
yeah,
of a crime, not
right.
Not me. I believe in the Constitution and the liberties in our country. I believe in the Second Amendment and, of course, the First Amendment,
right,
and all of the rest of them. I believe that public schools should remain public because education is powerful.
Right.
And I think that, as communities, we can have this conversation and educate each other. And as you said, Charles, we can reform our priorities as to what the issue should really be.
How come you sound so rational?
Well,
hold on a second. Yes, Sue?
Another fallacy that Robert was saying is there's no money. They said there was no money to fight smoking and to get rid of and get children to understand not to smoke. Well, we've succeeded in doing it. So where did that money come from?
Well, that money came from a huge lawsuit, not from volitional. It was extracted more or less at gunpoint from big tobacco.
But you and I know that there is is money. Well, you just have to.
There's money for whatever we have a will.
Whatever we want to put it on.
Right. Okay, I got to let you go, Sue. And caller, you're going to have the last word. We're down to the last couple of minutes. Your first name, please.
My name is Robert from another mother.
Hi, right, Robert.
Yes. I would like to know if in Florida they use the Salem-Keizer threat assessment templates or do they use the University of Virginia program. And
can you hear him okay, Sue?
Yes, I can.
Okay, go ahead.
And then I would also like to know if the PROMISE program in any way interfered with the objectivity of using any threat assessment template for students who were at risk.
Okay, that's more than enough for Sue to digest. Go ahead and answer him, if you would, please.
Well, yes, I'm very familiar with the threat assessment, even at the elementary school level. We did threat assessments.
Got about a minute
students.
And a half.
I also, think that that the threat assessment and the PROMISE program, it did interfere. And in this particular case, in my community, I think, that maybe that, hopefully that'll come out in the investigation. We
right.
need to go back and really look. Was that something that we put into place, the PROMISE program, that didn't work? I mean, before it keeps going on, we need to go back and assess and monitor and look at the results of that. And if this is definitely the case, then that needs to be reviewed.
Yeah, and it needs to be looked at very thoroughly and not just in a surface way. But so far, the
exactly.
results to be at least the results appear on the surface. And again, this Bears investigation appears on the surface to be at least 17 dead children and adults. So it really needs
Which
to be
is,
looked at very hard.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
I agree. We need to look at everything.
Yep. All right. We're out of time. I got to make room for my next guest, whom I have already booked. I would love to do a whole hour, maybe even 90 minutes after I read the book, and we go through it really thoroughly and have a probative interview on it. Okay?
Okay, Charles. Right. Thanks for the opportunity.
Did you get your point across?
Oh, I did.
Okay, great.
All right. I did.
Have a great day. All right.
Thanks.
AM, you're welcome. And we'll be right back after this break, and we'll have with us Chris Bird.
This is Dana Lash. You're listening to America Armed and Free with Charles Heller on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
The Constitution is the law that governs those who govern us, including governing judges. And judges should not be able to change the meaning of the Constitution. Even if some judge decides to do it wrongly once, doesn't mean other judges should be following that. They should be following the Constitution, not the views of dead justices.
Liberty Watch, so that government remains servant, not master. An America Armed and Free, about things with a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade. Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., right after Swap Shop.
She wore a Glock 17, and she looked really mean, and the way she shot was way beyond compare. Oh, she wouldn't carry another gun with bad guys standing there. But she walked through the night, and she ran up her sights, her treats and cons. Gleaming back at her. Oh, she wouldn't carry another gun with bad guys standing there.
Indeed not, although your mileage may vary, as they say on the internet. And Chris Bird was an officer in the British Army, and he served in the Royal Military Police. He is the author, most recently, of, quote, Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage, When Seconds Count, the Police are Still Minutes Away, unquote. And he hails originally from Britain, although he has worked in Australia, I'll say it properly, and he is also now a proud Texas resident. Righto?
Righto, Charles. However, I, as you say, I did get to Texas as soon as I could, and now I say y'all with conviction.
So if we have our urban dictionary, righto equals y'all. I love that, Chris. Hey, if you can't have fun, don't tune into America Armed and Free. You have a recent article. I want to get right to the meat of the matter. Sorry for the vegetarians out there, but you're screwed. Right to the meat of the matter, and that is you have a recent article in the paper of record, the Washington Times, and eliminating gun-free zones is a, toward less gun control, not more. Eliminating gun-free zones is a good place to start. Can you elucidate the give us an overview of that topic?
Oh, indeed. It's one of my pet peeves. Basically, gun-free zones aren't, in the same way that in the military, friendly fire isn't. Gun-free zones aren't. They're only free of law-abiding citizens with the best means of defending themselves and others. And almost all of the mass shootings that hit the headlines tend to be in places where ordinary citizens, even if they're licensed to carry a handgun, cannot carry. To wit, the most recent is the school shooting in Florida. There are two exceptions that I'm thoroughly familiar with. Mm-hmm. One was the shooting in your hometown,
right in Tucson, yeah,
with where Gabby Giffords was badly injured.
Mm-hmm.
And along with several other people, that was not a gun-free zone, and neither, it happens, was the church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, which
right.
is about 35 miles from where I live.
Hmm. I'll be darned.
But,
by the way,
that
massacre was stopped by another guy with the same gun.
Yeah, that one was ended by Stephen Williford,
mm-hmm.
who used his AR-15, which is the gun that Dianne Feinstein and other gun control advocates want to get banned or
yeah.
get rid of.
Right, by the way, there was another DGU in suburban Chicago last week with an AR-15.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting one. Somebody was
right.
observed a knifing going on outside his apartment, reached back inside his apartment, grabbed his house gun, which in the apartment was an AR-15, pointed it at the bad guy, and the bad guy suddenly discovered an appointment in another zip code.
Very wise of him.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the gun-free zone business is almost every state. When they passed a concealed carry law, and this was a great improvement, mostly in the 90s, mid-90s, and since then, the last two areas or states were Illinois and Wisconsin, who now have shall-issue concealed carry. But along with these new laws and regulations comes a whole list of places where license holders may not carry. And it's always those that are picked on by the mass shooters to carry out their depredations. And they may be nuts, but they're not stupid. And what they're looking for is as long a period of time between when they start shooting and when law enforcement turns up, so they can rack up as large a body count as possible. This is their aim and object. They're not interested in hostages or any of that sort of thing. Mostly it's just a body count. And the only way to stop these people is, as Wayne LaPierre has said, is a good guy with a gun. Unfortunately, the good guy often doesn't have his gun in these areas. And
yeah, that was true of Judge Roll here in the Tucson incident. He was an accomplished marksman with a 1911, and he was coming from church, and he didn't bring his gun to church.
Right, right. Mm. And that's what happened in Sutherland Springs. I'm told that there are four people at Sutherland Springs in the congregation who normally carry. One of them is the pastor who happened to be in Oklahoma for that weekend. And the other three apparently were not at that particular service. Had one of them been there with a gun, things might have been a whole lot different. As it was, there were 26 people killed and 20 wounded. One of the dead was a pregnant woman. So that was eventually stopped by Stephen Williford with his AR-15. And he was a neighbor, lives about 100 yards from the church, and heard the shooting and decided to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sure did. And he's probably saved a lot of lives. You know, talking about the response to this and the people who are licensed and in many cases trained, there's an example of one of those. First of all, before we talk about Faster, I want to talk about something else. In response to Sandy Hook, the killings there, Texas began to allow teachers to be armed. How is that working in Texas?
Appears to be working quite well. Actually, it happened, it started before Sandy Hook in Texas. The first school district to arm its teachers was Harold School District, which is up by the Oklahoma border. And the superintendent told me that the sheriff's office is 17 miles away. Well, they had been carrying a little before Sandy Hook, but Sandy Hook was basically a catalyst or a wake up call, and certainly in Texas and Ohio in particular, the Buckeye Firearms Foundation got together with the Tactical Defense Institute, and the foundation paid the freight for teachers to attend these three-day classes, well, teachers and school staff. And I've monitored a couple of those, and they're a really good program. They teach, in many cases, you have when the first responders, the so-called first responders, which are actually the second responders in most of these incidents, when they arrive, the protocol is that before EMS can go into a scene, the police have to declare it safe. Well, there may be people who are bleeding to death in there. So one of the things that they teach the school staff is how to stop bleeding, how to apply a tourniquet, and other methods of slowing or stopping bleeding until more professional help can arrive. They also teach perhaps the most important thing is, okay, you've shot the bad guy. Now law enforcement are going to arrive, and there you are standing with a gun in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to shoot you.
Right.
So
that's part of the protocol.
There are ways to avoid that.
That's part of the protocol, by the way, if you're still standing and you're not, and you don't have your hands in the air. I have had various police agencies tell me that in a school shooting, if the people aren't running away with their hands up and they're not laying on the floor, then you shoot them. Which is unfortunate because it's a bad doctrine, but I have had police officers in Tucson tell me that that was the doctrine.
Yeah, the best approach, I think, to that is that law enforcement needs to get together with the armed teachers,
right,
and the school superintendents. In a small district, they can get to know each other.
Right.
And one of the things that TDI does in Ohio is they have a more advanced program which includes police officers, first responders, and also armed teachers and other school staff members.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's if they can recognize each other, or at least they know what to expect. One of the things that they teach is if you've shot somebody down but you feel that you need to keep them covered, mm-hmm. is you send a responsible adult to stand between you and
the police.
Where you expect the police to come from,
right.
Hands in the air. And as soon as the first law enforcement officer arrives, you explain that there is a teacher who has just shot the bad guy. He's wearing whatever he happens to be wearing. Mm-hmm. Describe him. And then when the police arrive, that it's much less likely that the good guy is going to become a casualty.
Right. All right, stand by. We have your timing's perfect. We're up on our three-quarters of the hour mark. We'll be right back on AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice, in the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Call in right now if you want to ask anything of Chris Berg, who is very much a defense expert and a former soldier and in a firearms instructor in Texas. Talking about all staying free with us is Chris Bird. He is a firearms instructor and an author now and a journalist. And he's got is this your fourth book now?
Actually, the third one, although it started off with the Concealed Handgun Manual. And I'm now working on a seventh edition for that. So I've done a lot of writing, but all for that one book. I've got another one called Thank God I Had a Gun, which is now in its second edition.
Hmm.
And you can find them either on Amazon or go to my website, which is Chris Bird, that's B-I-R-D, .us.
All right. That's interesting, .us in an English accent. Hey, how old were you when you got your first gun in England? How old were you when you got your first gun in England?
Well, the first gun that I got was an Adams percussion revolver, which I bought for £5 in an antique store. And I was probably about, maybe 17, something like that. How I didn't blow myself up with that thing, I don't know.
Did you have to have a firearms license for a percussion revolver in England at the time?
Not at that time. I don't know how things are now because I haven't been there for a long time, but I did graduate at that point. If you belong to a valid shooting club and the police approved of you, my first two guns were both Smith & Wesson revolvers, a K-22 and a highway patrolman.
Fascinating that the first thing an Englishman does when he wants a gun is go get a Smith & Wesson, but I digress from the purpose of this interview.
Well, there was nobody to teach me much about self-defense type shooting, so my Bibles had to come from the U.S., and mm-hmm. they were Elmer Keith 6 guns and Ed McGivern's Fast and Fancy
revolver shooting. Right? Yeah, I was going to say you probably listened to Saint Keith from your training doctrine. Anyway, I'm off the path here. I want to go back to the idea of the article.
Right.
You talk about the recent shooting at Marjory Stoneman High School, where the killer used an AR-15. And it was also comparing it to the killing in Texas near you, 35 miles from you, where the killer was stopped with somebody with an AR-15. What is it that most of these killings have in common that a defender couldn't have been there? Is that what you're suggesting, legally?
Yeah, most of these, well, most school districts, I guess, with the exception of Utah, I know, mm-hmm. There is a prohibition. One of the places where even if you've got a license, you cannot carry, tends to be school districts and and universities and colleges, although that tends to be changing. That's changed in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But even here, you need the authority of the principal or the school superintendent or the school board, depending, for teachers to be armed. Most of the time, those sort of places, along with a whole list of others, it's always struck me as ridiculous. I'm walking down the street with my concealed handgun, and I'm legal. And I turn into a school or maybe a courthouse or something, and suddenly I'm illegal, and I can go to prison for having a gun. I have exhibited no traits of mental instability, at least. There may be some people that might argue against that, but so far I think I have all my wits about me.
Yeah, I think you do a fairly good job.
And I at least have no criminal record.
At least in writing, anyway. Chris, hold on a second. I'm going to talk to Robert. Robert, you're on with Chris Bird of Thank God I Had a Gun and the Concealed Handgun Manual, now in its seventh printing. Your comment or question for him?
Yes, I have a question about how much detail do the state authorities go into in terms of the types of firearms or ammunition that can be carried? Specifically, do some states require frangible loads, or do they allow whatever the individual teacher or adult wants to carry?
Well, some states ban frangible loads, like, for instance, New Jersey. If your bullet expands, it's worth a year in jail and $1,000 fine for each one you have.
Yeah, you were a little bit broken up with the question, but...
he asks, do states...
States tend to have... different regulations in that regard, I think.
Yeah. No state that I know of has a requirement for frangible ammunition, which would be a good idea. Frangible means that the ammunition begins to crush and change its shape, like a hollow point does. And the point of doing that is it takes a lot of energy to make the bullet change its shape. And that energy comes from the kinetic energy of the bullet. Therefore, the bullet has a tendency to slow down and be less injurious after the first thing it hits, hopefully the bad guy. But if it misses the bad guy and is flying loose in the community, as soon as it hits the pavement, it begins to lose its energy. Jeff, follow up, Robert?
Well, yes. I thank you very much for clarifying my question, because the intent of my question was to get to the point that you made, that there are some loads that will deposit all of their energy without having collateral damage, because two layers of sheetrock or one file cabinet will not stop a gold dot or an HST.
Right, that's true, but there are some loads out there that will. For instance, the Glazer safety slug is made to be far less powerful on the other side of two sheets of drywall. It could still have lethal effect, but it has far less of it on the other sides of two pieces of sheetrock or some other device. By the same token, it won't penetrate as well into people, but if it hits the person as the first target, it has a better chance of doing the job it's supposed to do. Chris, going back to this, there are states there are 16 states that have some form of school carry. Kentucky has it. Colorado has it. There are different states that have different levels of it. And I know, of course, Ohio from the FASTER program has it. Has Ohio had a school shooting?
How what? Oh, how does that affect school shooting?
No, has Ohio had a school shooting? That you know of?
I'm not aware of one, and I think I probably would since Sandy Hook. Before that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, Sandy Hook was the catalyst that started a lot of these programs and started people thinking, well, obviously what we do at the moment isn't working. And, I can understand the desire to do something, but let's do something that has a chance of working instead of something that is just going to make the lawmakers feel good.
Uh-huh.
And I think the sort of legislation that is being promoted out of that school shooting in Florida is basically, if there's anything, it's going to be feel-good legislation, which doesn't do a thing to actually stop school shootings.
Right. In the very, very limited time we have, about 90 seconds we have left, some states have laws that prohibit armed people except police officers from being in the schools, and they have to overcome it. What would you recommend as a training standard? Because you don't need to have someone trained to be a police officer to that standard necessarily to be armed in the school and be effective. What standard would be good?
Well, I look at that program in Ohio.
FASTER.
It's called the FASTER program. I forget exactly what FASTER stands for, but it's,
Faculty Administrator Safety Training and Emergency Response. I couldn't remember it either. I have it written
down.
I have it written down. Yeah, right. It came from your article.
but their program. They do some shooting at distance. They do a lot of role-playing exercises in shoot houses, and a lot of things like with the role-playing. Okay, you shot down one bad guy. Does he have a partner? And that's something that is not that common, but it's certainly something to be aware of. The right. Columbine incident was done by two people.
Right, with D and K, whose names will not be mentioned, right? All right, well, we're in theme music, so go ahead and give your website one more time, if you would.
Okay, it's Chris Bird, chrisbird.us.
All right, well, cheerio, y'all. Have a wonderful
day. Thank you, Charles.
You're welcome.
A pleasure as always.
Ditto. And I want to encourage you to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Holy light, protect us by thy might. Great God, our King.